But first, how about a little Kinks on your Tuesday afternoon?
Picture yourself when you're getting on.
We are joined by our friend, writer Colin Fleming, to talk, well, about the Kinks, and specifically an album, Colin, that was overlooked at the time, but ought to be considered one of the best of all time.
Very overlooked at the time. In fact, it was reviewed in, want to have a guess, Kimball? How many magazines in England?
Two.
You're close. One. You have the over on that.
Wow.
But yes, one review in all of England, and the rub of the reviews in the rest of the world were that psychedelia is happening, the Beatles, Hendrix, everyone is doing much craziness, and oh, God bless those Kinks. They stick to the tried and true and the old and the bygone world, which really, although these reviews meant well, the kind of condescending, right? Left-handed compliments, because I think this is a Vanguard album. It only reached 100,000 sales, only, but still, for a band of this ilk, it is an only, last year, 2018. So 50 years later, it took that long to get qualified as whatever mineral status that is, gold, platinum, I'm not sure. But it's really an album, and this is why it's long interested me. I've been into this album since I was about 16 years old, because it reaches inward. It's an album that celebrates caring about what you legitimately care about, not what you're told to care about, which I think results in a lot of faux caring, but what you are passionate, what is endemic to your interest, which for Davies, Ray Davies, is crystallized in that notion of the Village Green as really a gateway.
Well, and it was an album that in many ways looked back to simpler times, to childhood, and that certainly wasn't what was going on in really anywhere in the popular culture in late 1968.
Maybe it wasn't what was going on in the popular culture, but here's the genius. It is what is going on in all of us all the time and always will be. And to tap into that is a rare level of ability. And the popular culture, I'm not even so sure about that, because think of something from just the year before, Strawberry Fields Forever by the Beatles. That's Lennon reaching back into his own youth, that Salvation Army home. But it's prismatic. It's not really about a Salvation Army home. And this album isn't really about China Cup, virginity, Bela Lugosi, that type of thing that you get in the title track. It's about that notion of a portal to what matters to you, what is going to be central to making you who you are. It's a very game. This is where it's radical. It's a very game fight to find out who you are and to be true to whatever that is, whomever that is, which I think really is a thwart with popular culture in some ways, but it's what we're all really striving towards, what we know is best for us, but which we often lack the courage to go for. We lack the vision. We lack the courage to try to have the vision. And this album, again, that notion of crystallization, it comes together here in this record as a kind of signpost to say, this is the way you want to go, whatever it may be for you. Maybe it's surfing. Maybe it's hunting butterflies in the forest. For Ray Davies, it was that notion of the Village Green.
That was interesting, doing a little research to find out that the album was also influenced by Under Milkwood, Dylan Thomas.
Sure, and people don't know Under Milkwood. You'll likely know some permutation, maybe a TV version, of A Child's Christmas in Wales. And that's about a 20-minute long, whatever you want to call it. You can call it a poem, you can call it a short story. A lot of the stories in Under Milkwood, they're vignettes as much as they are short stories. But you're going with that notion, again, of something that is a conveyance to take you somewhere else. When you go back into your memories, when you go back into childhood, think about that. Why do people like nostalgia? It's not really that they wish to regress. They had a kind of unfettered happiness at the time. And what they're doing, maybe subconsciously, but they're still doing it, is trying to find a way to transpose that happiness to their current situation. So Dylan Thomas makes a lot of sense for someone like Ray Davies. And I think that's why I, as a kid, came for one of the first bands I got into. For me, it was like the Beatles, and then it was the Animals, the Yardbirds. So you had this blend of everything with the Beatles. You had the rough and tumble R&B of the Animals. You had the sonic virtuosity of the Yardbirds. And then you had the Kinks. And as someone who was always trying to write, they made a certain amount of sense to me. Actually, I have a firsthand account of Ray Davies doing a sort of modern Village Green kind of deal with me there. When I was in college, he was coming to Boston. He was on some book tour, and he was going to, I don't know if you've been to this part of Boston, but there used to be a giant Borders downtown, near Downtown Crossing, and he was going to do this reading there. And he shows up at the Borders, and he didn't like it, didn't have any personality, that type of thing. Across the street is Old South Meeting House. So Davies said, I want to do my reading in here, which makes sense when you're this English guy and it's New England. A lot of our architecture is basically half-inched from England. You walk around Boston, you are looking at something like Manchester in 1870. So I turned up. I'd written all these things on Ray Davies, right? Like, I'm going to be a writer. This is happening. And you weren't supposed to get near him. You're supposed to give your book to someone, and they would walk it over, and he'd sign it. And I, like, ducked under somebody. And I walked over with my little pathetic stack of juvenilia. And I'm like, Village Green, Preservation Society. And he asked me my name, and he was really nice. And he said to me, so you get what a Village Green means? And I'm like, yep, I absolutely do, my friend.
That's fantastic. I love that story.
And I've like, do you have Village Greens? The actual Village Greens. I assume people listening know what a Village Green is. We're using that kind of loosely. But in any New England town, they're so prevalent that we almost take them for granted. It's that spot downtown where there's the church, there's like the police station, there's kind of that crossroads in the middle. And it's so simple. It's part of our ruralistic landscape architecture that, again, is flown over from England, basically, an idea. And when I was a kid, I lived in Mansfield in Foxborough, where the Patriots play, the next town over. And Foxborough has a classic New England and English Village Green. And I remember going there as a kid. There's a movie theater. And it was, again, this very simple setup, but it was where I saw, like, Star Wars for the first time and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And in my mind, so I've had this experience, too, this Village Green crystallized as, again, this portal. It can take you back. It can help you go forward. It can help you learn about yourself better, and it can help you learn about other people better. And what a neat idea to have an album that's about them. If that sounds, like, kind of heavy and philosophical, do not forget. Anyone who hasn't heard this album, you'll know this right away if you choose to listen to this. There must be some tracks on YouTube. It is so tuneful. You will walk around singing songs like the one we played here at the beginning, which is about, amazingly, a very prescient song, people who take pictures of each other so that they can remember that they really existed. That's what some of you are doing right now as I'm talking to Facebook. That's exactly what that is. And note the key word, existed. There's a big difference between existing, easy to do, it's kind of being dead while you're alive almost, and living, which is a much more active thing. And this is an album about living, and that's why it'll last another 50 years, another 500 years, and until the last beat of time.
Well, and maybe because I got caught up in watching the Twilight Zone marathons, as I always do around New Year's, but thinking about the Village Green and this album takes me back to my absolute favorite Twilight Zone episode, Walking Distance.
Well, I think that's the absolute best episode, don't you?
And I do.
It was episode number 5, I think. It was very early. It was like 5 or 6. I'm pretty sure it was 5. And it's like, wow, how did you nail everything so definitively, so quickly? You can actually go through different television shows, and you can basically tell how good they are by how quickly they got to a definitive episode that was always going to last. If they do it like within 10, it's probably going to be a show that's going to stay in our consciousness. And that is such a well-rounded episode, and it has that whimsicality, and it has, crucially, a Village Green. It has kind of a modified Village Green because you have like the ride and you have the gazebo. It's like a fancy Village Green that Ray Davies wouldn't have necessarily known. you know the song Waterloo Sunset, very romantic song by Davis. I think it's the most beautiful song in the history of Western music. And if you listen to it, it sounds like it's about sunsets and all this wonderful love and romance, but it was actually based upon some like dingy kind of like Kenmore Square guzziness in England. And that idea of going back and walking distance and meeting up with the character, meets up with his parents, and they, basically the father says, you can't be here. You have to go back to your own time. I think that's wise advice for all of us. And it would dovetail very nicely with Village Green Preservation Society. You and I should get on YouTube, and we can do a glorious mashup of Twilight Zone and Pink.
I love the sound of that. We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. And you mentioned it earlier, the idea that people now don't really like the things that they claim to like, that outside forces direct them, and it's quickly on to the next big thing, whatever they're told they should like. How do we find that for ourselves? How do we learn to tune out the noise and find something that's meaningful to us, no matter what other people think?
You have to disconnect to connect. And in the latter case, you have to connect with yourself. You have to walk away sometimes from everything that is barraging you. Or you have to have, I had a hockey coach who always said this, who would make you skate until you threw up in a bucket of center ice if you stopped the runway during sprints. You have to have mental discipline. I'm convinced that if somehow we rig the system, this is basically what the system is, so that, I used an example in something I wrote the other day. Someone went on TV and they cut up a slug for a half hour in 50 pieces, and that was the television program. And Vulture wrote think tank pieces on it, and there was Point Counterpoint and Facebook, and it was on the Netflix, all of that. People would think that they liked it. I think you can take anything that people do not like and basically get them to like it. If there was a way to accredit really bad things, discrimination of people of color, if that became a kind of moral virtue that was somehow pumped out into the system, I think people would start to think, you know what, I'm going to look after my kind. That's what's the right thing for an ethical person to do. That's how dangerous things are right now. Another Twilight Zone episode, the one the monsters are due on Maple Street, right?
Oh, yeah.
You come to the end of that episode when all of this stuff has happened, and you have these two aliens who are looking down at the Earth people, and they're like, moron. Look how easy this was to get them to turn against each other. I don't really know people anymore who I think, you know what, that guy is way into Civil War stuff. I don't know anyone who is into anything that isn't the thing that you're told to be into at the time. I mean, I know you. You're an exception. I know what you like, but I don't know many people like that. And you don't know many people like that either. Yeah. And I think people feel frightened to go out and like the things they like because they want to feel like they're part of a group because they don't have the confidence, but they're part of a bad group. They're part of a group that's all about nullity rather than living life. And that's why so many people are more depressed than ever.
I have to bring this up before I let you go. I laughed out loud reading your blog post a couple of days ago about Handel's Messiah and the guy you referred to as Mini Gronk, who is having trouble understanding and appreciating it fully.
Yeah, I go to a lot of classical concerts throughout the year. Probably go to like 50. And in most of them, it's Colin and the Octogenarian. And I feel pretty spry, Mr. Kimball.
Well, yeah.
Like, right. I could totally make the Patriots this year the way that people are looking at me. But when you go to Messiah, I am always wedged between... I'm on my own. I have a miserable life. So I'm there on my own. And it'll be a couple on one side, a couple on the other side. Each of the couples, she'll be hot. He'll be like, ha, ha, ha. He had to see some Messiah. Let's see how the Patriots are doing on the cell phone. And he's just stuffed into like a shirt with a collar, right? He's like, come on, dear. Isn't this really nice? We're being cultured. And the guy is basically Gronk at Messiah. But when it comes to the Hallelujah chorus, this guy stands up as if to say, ha, ha, ha. I get it. Gronk spike. And it's really upsetting because I'm trying to give this woman this look around this guy's like chest to be like, hey, I'm cultured, and I like the sport too. You like Sports Illustrated? I've written it for them. No, I'm here with my neat head. It's very dispiriting.
Yes, but is anything better, though, and I say this as a married man, is anything better then the look that it sounds like you got from her, that acknowledgement that, yes, this is who I'm stuck with, but you and I would connect on a far different level.
I think some of that look, I don't know, man, it might be in my head at this point. Like I'm trying to manifest some wish fulfillment where eventually one of them just says, oh, and you're a sexy master of the post. Someone told me the other day that my all-encompassing female voice sounds like Miss Piggy, so maybe that's really disrespectful. But someday, when I'm at that Starbucks, Kimball, I'm going to have some great story. And he's going to be like, wow, he actually made it happen, and this is how it's supposed to be. Let's go play some Kinks.
I believe it will happen. I look forward to that day, Colin.
All right, my friend.
We'll talk with you next week. Colin Fleming here on Downtown every Tuesday afternoon. Check out his work at ColinFlemingLit.com as well.